He had half a mind to stay and see the cart packed with the remaining wines and provisions, knowing that they would deceive and defraud Mitya. But, suddenly feeling vexed with himself, he turned away with a curse and went to the tavern to play billiards. "He's a fool, though he's a good fellow," he muttered as he went. "I've heard of that officer, Grushenka's former flame. Well, if he has turned up. Eck, those pistols. Damn it all. I'm not his nurse. Let them do what they like. Besides, it'll all come to nothing. They're a set of brawlers, that's all. They'll drink and fight, fight and make friends again. They are not men who do anything real. What does he mean by I'm stepping aside, I'm punishing myself? It'll come to nothing." He's shouted such phrases a thousand times, drunk, in the taverns. But now he's not drunk. Drunk in spirit, they're fond of fine phrases. The villains. Am I his nurse? He must have been fighting, his face was all over blood. With whom? I shall find out at the Metropolis. And his handkerchief was soaked in blood. It's still lying on my floor. Hang it. He reached the tavern in a bad humor and at once made up a game. The game cheered him. He played a second game, and suddenly began telling one of his partners that Dmitri Karamazov had come in for some cash again, something like 3,000 rubles, and had gone to Mokroa again to spend it with Grushenka. This news roused singular interest in his listeners. They all spoke of it, not laughing, but with a strange gravity. They left off playing. 3,000? But where can he have got 3,000? Questions were asked. The story of Madame Holokov's present was received with skepticism. Hasn't he robbed his old father? That's the question. 3,000. There's something odd about it. He boasted aloud that he would kill his father. We all heard him, here. And it was 3,000 he talked about. Pyotr Ilyich listened. All at once he became short and dry in his answers. He said not a word about the blood on Mitya's face and hands, though he had meant to speak of it at first. They began a third game, and by degrees the talk about Mitya died away. But by the end of the third game, Pyotr Ilyich felt no more desire for billiards. He laid down the cue, and without having supper as he had intended, he walked out of the tavern. When he reached the marketplace he stood still in perplexity, wondering at himself. He realized that what he wanted was to go to Fyodor Pavlovich's and find out if anything had happened there. On account of some stupid nonsense as it's sure to turn out, am I going to wake up the household and make a scandal? Foo. Damn it, is it my business to look after them? In a very bad humor he went straight home, and suddenly remembered Fenya. Damn it all. I ought to have questioned her just now, he thought with vexation. I should have heard everything. And the desire to speak to her, and so find out, became so pressing and importunate that when he was halfway home he turned abruptly and went towards the house where Grushenka lodged. Going up to the gate he knocked. The sound of the knock in the silence of the night sobered him and made him feel annoyed. And no one answered him, everyone in the house was asleep. And I shall be making a fuss. He thought, with a feeling of positive discomfort. But instead of going away altogether, he fell to knocking again with all his might, filling the street with glamour. Not coming? Well, I will knock them up, I will. He muttered at each knock, fuming at himself, but at the same time he redoubled his knocks on the gate. Chapter 6, I am coming. 2. But Dmitri Fyodorovich was speeding along the road. It was a little more than 20 versts to Mokro, but Andrei's three horses galloped at such a pace that the distance might be covered in an hour and a quarter. The swift motion revived Mitya. The air was fresh and cool, there were big stars shining in the sky. It was the very night, and perhaps the very hour, in which Alishor fell on the earth, and rapturously swore to love it for ever and ever. All was confusion, confusion in Mitya's soul, but although many things were goading his heart, at that moment his whole being was yearning for her, his queen, to whom he was flying to look on her for the last time. One thing I can say for certain, His heart did not waver for one instant. I shall perhaps not be believed when I say the rival, who seemed to have sprung out of the earth. If any other had appeared on the scene, he would have been jealous at once, and would, perhaps, have stained his fierce hands with blood again. But as he flew through the night, he felt no envy, no hostility even, for the man who had been her first lover. It is true he had not yet seen him. Here there was no room for dispute, it was her right and his, this was her first love which, after 5 years, she had not forgotten, so she had loved him only for those 5 years, and I, how do I come in? What right have I? Step aside, Monsieur, and make way. What am I now? Now everything is over apart from the officer, even if he had not appeared, everything would be over. These words would roughly have expressed his feelings, if he had been capable of reasoning. But he could not reason at that moment. His present plan of action had arisen without reasoning. At Fenya's first words, it had sprung from feeling, and been adopted in a flash, with all its consequences. And yet, in spite of his resolution, there was confusion in his soul, an agonizing confusion. His resolution did not give him peace. There was so much behind that tortured him. And it seemed strange to him, at moments, to think that he had written his own sentence of death with pen and paper, I punish myself, and the paper was lying there in his pocket, ready. The pistol was loaded, he had already resolved how, next morning, he would meet the first warm ray of golden-haired Phoebus. And yet he could not be quit of the past, of all that he had left behind and that tortured him. He felt that miserably, and the thought of it sank into his heart with despair. There was one moment when he felt an impulse to stop Andre, to jump out of the cart, to pull out his loaded pistol, and to make an end of everything without waiting for the dawn. But that moment flew by like a spark. The horses galloped on, devouring space, and as he drew near his goal, again the thought of her alone, took more and more complete possession of his soul, chasing away the fearful images that had been haunting it. Oh, how he longed to look upon her, if only for a moment, if only from a distance. She's now with him, he thought, now I shall see what she looks like with him. Her first love, and that's all I want. Never had this woman, who was such a fateful influence in his life, aroused such love in his breast. Such new and unknown feeling, surprising even to himself, a feeling tender to devoutness, to self-effacement before her. I will efface myself, he said, in a rush of almost hysterical ecstasy. They had been galloping nearly an hour. Mattia was silent, and though Andre was, as a rule, a talkative peasant, he did not utter a word, either. He seemed afraid to talk, he only whipped up smartly his three lean, but mettlesome, bay horses. Suddenly Mitya cried out in horrible anxiety, Andre. What if they're asleep? This thought fell upon him like a blow. It had not occurred to him before. It may well be that they're gone to bed by now, Dmitri Fyodorovich. Mitya frowned as though in pain. Yes, indeed. He was rushing there. With such feelings. While they were asleep. She was asleep, perhaps, the two. An angry feeling surged up in his heart. Drive on, Andre. Whip them up. Look alive. He cried, beside himself. But maybe they're not in bed. Andre went on after a pause. Time if he said there were a lot of them there. At the station? Not at the posting station, but at Plastunov's, at the inn, where they let out horses, too. I know. So you say there are a lot of them. How's that? Who are they? Cried Mitya, greatly dismayed at this unexpected news. Well, Timofey was saying they're all gentlefolk. Two from our town, who they are I can't say, and there are two others, strangers, maybe more besides. I didn't ask particularly. They've set to playing cards, so Timofey said. Cards? So, maybe they're not in bed if they're at cards. It's most likely not more than 11. Quicker, Andre. Quicker. Mitya cried again, nervously. May I ask you something, sir? Said Andre, after a pause. Only I'm afraid of angering you, sir. What is it? Why, Fenya threw herself at your feet just now, and begged you not to harm her mistress, and someone else, too. So you see, sir, it's I am taking you there. Forgive me, sir, it's my conscience. Maybe it's stupid of me to speak of it. Mattia suddenly seized him by the shoulders from behind. Are you a driver? He asked frantically. Yes, sir. Then you know that one has to make way. What would you say to a driver who wouldn't make way for anyone, but would just drive on and crush people? No, a driver mustn't run over people. One can't run over a man. One can't spoil people's lives. And if you have spoilt a life, punish yourself. If only you've spoilt, if only you've ruined anyone's life, punish yourself and go away. These phrases burst from Mitya almost hysterically. Though Andrei was surprised at him, he kept up the conversation. That's right, Dmitri Fyodorovich, you're quite right, one mustn't crush or torment a man, or any kind of creature, for every creature is created by God. Take a horse, for instance, for some folks, even among us drivers, drive anyhow. Nothing will restrain them, they just force it along. To hell? Mitya interrupted, and went off into his abrupt, short laugh. Andrei, simple soul, he seized him by the shoulders again, tell me, will Dmitri Fyodorovich Karamazov go to hell, or not? What do you think? I don't know, darling. It depends on you, for you are. You see, sir, when the Son of God was nailed on the cross and died, he went straight down to hell from the cross, and set free all sinners that were in agony. And the devil groaned, because he thought that he would get no more sinners in hell. And God said to him, then, don't groan, for you shall have all the mighty of the earth, the rulers, the chief judges, and the rich men, and shall be filled up as you have been in all the ages till I come again. Those were his very words. A peasant legend. Capital. Whip up the left, Andrei. So you see, sir, who it is hell's for, said Andrei, whipping up the left horse, but you're like a little child. That's how we look on you. And though you're hasty, tempered, sir, yet God will forgive you for your kind heart. And you, do you forgive me, Andrei? What should I forgive you for, sir? You've never done me any harm. No, for everyone, you here alone, on the road, will you forgive me for everyone? Speak, simple peasant heart. Oh, sir. I feel afraid of driving you, your talk is so strange. But Mitya did not hear. He was frantically praying and muttering to himself. Lord, receive me, with all my lawlessness, and do not condemn me. Let me pass by thy judgment. Do not condemn me, for I have condemned myself, do not condemn me, for I love thee, O Lord. I am a wretch, but I love thee. If thou sendest me to hell, I shall love thee there, and from there I shall cry out that I love thee for ever and ever. But let me love to the end. Here and now for just 5 hours. Till the first light of thy day. For I love the queen of my soul. I love her and I cannot help loving her. Thou sayst my whole heart. I shall gallop up, I shall fall before her and say, you are right to pass on and leave me. Farewell and forget your victim. Never fret yourself about me. Mokro! Cried Andrei, pointing ahead with his whip. Through the pale darkness of the night loomed a solid black mass of buildings, flung down, as it were, in the vast plain. The village of Mokro numbered 2,000 inhabitants, but at that hour all were asleep, and only here and there a few lights still twinkled. Drive on, Andrei, I come! Mitya exclaimed, feverishly. They're not asleep, said Andrei again, pointing with his whip to the Plastunov's inn, which was at the entrance to the village. The 6 windows, looking on the street, were all brightly lighted up. They're not asleep, Mitya repeated joyously. Quicker, Andrei. Gallop. Drive up with a dash. Set the bells ringing. Let all know that I have come. I'm coming. I'm coming, too. Andrei lashed his exhausted team into a gallop, drove with a dash and pulled up his steaming, panting horses at the high flight of steps. Mitya jumped out of the cart just as the innkeeper, on his way to bed, peeped out from the steps curious to see who had arrived. "Trifon Borisovich, is that you?" The innkeeper bent down, looked intently, ran down the steps, and rushed up to the guest with obsequious delight. "Dmitri Fyodorovich, your honor. Do I see you again?" Trifon Borisovich was a thick, set, healthy peasant, of middle height, with a rather fat face. His expression was severe and uncompromising, especially with the peasants of Mokrow, but he had the power of assuming the most obsequious countenance, when he had an inkling that it was to his interest. He dressed in Russian style, with a shirt buttoning down on one side, and a full, skirted coat. He had saved a good sum of money, but was forever dreaming of improving his position. More than half the peasants were in his clutches, everyone in the neighborhood was in debt to him. From the neighboring landowners he bought and rented lands which were worked by the peasants, in payment of debts which they could never shake off. He was a widower, with four grown-up daughters. One of them was already a widow and lived in the inn with her two children, his grandchildren, and worked for him like a charwoman. Another of his daughters was married to a petty official, and in one of the rooms of the inn, on the wall could be seen, among the family photographs, a miniature photograph of this official in uniform and official epaulettes. The two younger daughters used to wear fashionable blue or green dresses, fitting tight at the back, and with trains a yard long, on church holidays or when they went to pay visits. But next morning they would get up at dawn, as usual, sweep out the rooms with a birch broom, empty the slops, and clean up after lodgers. In spite of the thousands of rubles he had saved, Trifon Borisovich was very fond of emptying the pockets of a drunken guest, and remembering that not a month ago he had, in 24 hours, made 200 if not 300 rubles out of Dmitri, when he had come on his escapade with Grushenka, he met him now with eager welcome, scenting his prey the moment Mitya drove up to the steps. "Dmitri Fyodorovich, dear sir, we see you once more. Stay, Trifon Borisovich," began Mitya, "first and foremost, where is she? Agrafena Alexandrovna?" The innkeeper understood at once, looking sharply into Mitya's face. "She's here, too."
"With whom?"
"With whom? Some strangers. One is an official gentleman, a Pole, to judge from his speech. He sent the horses for her from here, and there's another with him, a friend of his, or a fellow traveler, there's no telling. They're dressed like civilians. Well, are they feasting? Have they money? Poor sort of a feast. Nothing to boast of, Dmitri Fyodorovich. Nothing to boast of. And who are the others?" "They're two gentlemen from the town. They've come back from Chernihiv, and are putting up here. One's quite a young gentleman, a relative of Mr. Musov he must be, but I've forgotten his name. And I expect you know the other, too, a gentleman called Maximov. He's been on a pilgrimage, so he says, to the monastery in the town. He's traveling with this young relation of Mr. Musov. Is that all?
Stay, listen, Trifon Borisovich. Tell me the chief thing, what of her? How is she?"
"Oh, she's only just come. She's sitting with them."
"Is she cheerful? Is she laughing?"
"No, I think she's not laughing much. She's sitting quite dull. She's combing the young gentleman's hair."
"The Pole? The officer?"
"He's not young, and he's not an officer, either."
"Not him, sir. It's the young gentleman that's Mr. Musov's relation. I've forgotten his name.
Kalganov?
That's it, Kalganov.
All right. I'll see for myself. Are they playing cards?"
"They have been playing, but they've left off. They've been drinking tea. The official gentleman asked for liqueurs."
"Stay, Trifon Borisovich, stay, my good soul. I'll see for myself. Now answer one more question, are the gypsies here?"
"You can't have the gypsies now, Dmitri Fyodorovich. The authorities have sent them away. But we've Jews that play the cymbals and the fiddle in the village, so one might send for them. They'd come. Send for them. Certainly send for them, cried Mitya. And you can get the girls together as you did then, Mary especially, Stepanida, too, and Arina. 200 rubles for a chorus. Oh, for a sum like that I can get all the village together, though by now they're asleep. Are the peasants here worth such kindness, Dmitri Fyodorovich, or the girls either? To spend a sum like that on such coarseness and rudeness. What's the good of giving a peasant a cigar to smoke, the stinking ruffian? And the girls are all lousy. Besides, I'll get my daughters up for nothing, let alone a sum like that. They've only just gone to bed, I'll give them a kick and set them singing for you. You gave the peasants champagne to drink the other day, Ek. For all his pretended compassion for Mitya, Trifon Borisovich had hidden half a dozen bottles of champagne on that last occasion, and had picked up a 100-ruble note under the table, and it had remained in his clutches. Trifon Borisovich, I sent more than 1,000 flying last time I was here. Do you remember? You did send it flying. I may well remember. You must have left 3,000 behind you. Well, I've come to do the same again, do you see? And he pulled out his roll of notes, and held them up before the innkeeper's nose. Now, listen and remember. In an hour's time the wine will arrive, savories, pies, and sweets, bring them all up at once. That box Andrei has got is to be brought up at once, too. Open it, and hand champagne immediately. And the girls, we must have the girls, Mary especially. He turned to the cart and pulled out the box of pistols. Here, Andrei, let's settle. Here's 15 rubles for the drive, and 50 for vodka. For your readiness, for your love. Remember Karamazov? I'm afraid, sir, Andrei. Give me 5 rubles extra, but more I won't take. Trifon Borisovich, bear witness. Forgive my foolish words. What are you afraid of? Asked Mitya, scanning him. Well, go to the devil, if that's it. He cried, flinging him 5 rubles. Now, Trifon Borisovich, take me up quietly and let me first get a look at them, so that they don't see me. Where are they? In the blue room? Trifon Borisovich looked apprehensively at Mitya, but at once obediently did his bidding. Leading him into the passage, he went himself into the first large room, adjoining that in which the visitors were sitting, and took the light away. Then he stealthily led Mitya in, and put him in a corner in the dark, whence he could freely watch the company without being seen. But Mitya did not look long, and, indeed, he could not see them. He saw her. His heart throbbed violently, and all was dark before his eyes. She was sitting sideways to the table in a low chair, and beside her, on the sofa, was the pretty youth, Kalganov. She was holding his hand and seemed to be laughing, while he, seeming vexed and not looking at her, was saying something in a loud voice to Maximov, who sat the other side of the table, facing Grushenka. Maximov was laughing violently at something. On the sofa sat he, and on a chair by the sofa there was another stranger. The one on the sofa was lolling backwards, smoking a pipe, and Mitya had an impression of a stoutish, broad-faced, short little man, who was apparently angry about something. His friend, the other stranger, struck Mitya as extraordinarily tall, but he could make out nothing more. He caught his breath. He could not bear it for a minute. He put the pistol case on a chest, and with a throbbing heart he walked, feeling cold all over, straight into the blue room to face the company. "Eh?" shrieked Grushenka, the first to notice him. Chapter 7, The First and Rightful Lover. With his long, rapid strides, Mitya walked straight up to the table. "Gentlemen," he said in a loud voice, almost shouting, yet stammering at every word, I'm all right. Don't be afraid," he exclaimed. There's nothing the matter." He turned suddenly to Grushenka, who had shrunk back in her chair towards Kalganov, and clasped his hand tightly. I'm coming," 2. I'm here till morning. Gentlemen, may I stay with you till morning? Only till morning, for the last time, in this same room? So he finished, turning to the fat little man, with the pipe, sitting on the sofa. The latter removed his pipe from his lips with dignity and observed severely, Painey, we're here in private. There are other rooms. Pan and Painey mean Mr. in Polish. Panny means Mrs., Panovi, gentlemen. Why, it's you, Dmitri Fyodorovich. What do you mean? Answered Kalganov, suddenly. Sit down with us. How are you? Delighted to see you, dear. And precious fellow, I always thought a lot of you. Mitya responded, joyfully and eagerly, at once holding out his hand across the table. Eh? How tight you squeeze. You've quite broken my fingers, laughed Kalganov. He always squeezes like that, always, Grushenka put in gaily, with a timid smile, seeming suddenly convinced from Mitya's face that he was not going to make a scene. She was watching him with intense curiosity and still some uneasiness. She was impressed by something about him, and indeed the last thing she expected of him was that he would come in and speak like this at such a moment. Good evening, Maximov ventured blandly on the left. Mitya rushed up to him, too. Good evening. You're here, too. How glad I am to find you here, too. Gentlemen, gentlemen, I. He addressed the polished gentleman with the pipe again, evidently taking him for the most important person present. I flew here. I wanted to spend my last day, my last hour in this room, in this very room. Where I, too, adored. My queen. Forgive me, Painey. He cried wildly. I flew here and vowed. Oh, don't be afraid, it's my last night. Let's drink to our good understanding. They'll bring the wine at once. I brought this with me. Something made him pull out his bundle of notes. Allow me, Painey. I want to have music, singing, a revel, as we had before. But the worm, the unnecessary worm, will crawl away, and there'll be no more of him. I will commemorate my day of joy on my last night. He was almost choking. There was so much he wanted to say, but strange exclamations were all that came from his lips. The Pole gazed fixedly at him, at the bundle of notes in his hand, looked at Grushenka, and was in evident perplexity. If my sovereign lady is permitting, he was beginning. What does sovereign mean? Sovereign, I suppose? Interrupted Grushenka. I can't help laughing at you, the way you talk. Sit down, Mitya, what are you talking about? Don't frighten us, please. You won't frighten us, will you? If you won't, I am glad to see you. Me frighten you? Cried Mitya, flinging up his hands. Oh, pass me by, go your way, I won't hinder you. And suddenly he surprised them all, and no doubt himself as well, by flinging himself on a chair, and bursting into tears, turning his head away to the opposite wall, while his arms clasped the back of the chair tight, as though embracing it. Come, come, what a fellow you are! Cried Grushenka reproachfully. That's just how he comes to see me, he begins talking, and I can't make out what he means. He cried like that once before, and now he's crying again. It's shameful. Why are you crying? As though you had anything to cry for. She added enigmatically, emphasizing each word with some irritability. I'm not crying. Well, good evening. He instantly turned round in his chair, and suddenly laughed, not his abrupt wooden laugh, but a long, quivering, inaudible nervous laugh. Well, there you are again. Come, cheer up, cheer up. Grushenka said to him persuasively. I'm very glad you've come, very glad, Mitya, do you hear, I'm very glad. I want him to stay here with us, she said peremptorily, addressing the whole company, though her words were obviously meant for the man sitting on the sofa. I wish it, and if he goes away I shall go, too, she added with flashing eyes. What my queen commands is law, pronounced the Pole, gallantly kissing Grushenka's hand. I beg you, Payne, to join our company, he added politely, addressing Mitya. Mitya was jumping up with the obvious intention of delivering another tirade, but the words did not come.